Hey guys, my name is Sabir Bharti. A very warm welcome to another episode of the Sabir Bharti Show, the place where I interview interesting people with interesting perspectives. My guest today is Lois Hollis, that's spelled LOIS HOLLIS on Twitter at Lois Hollis 3 and the website, which is loishollis.com. I will, of course, also include Lois's other social media links in both the YouTube and podcast description. Lois Hollis is on a mission to shift opinion on what she describes as one of the most forbidden subjects, that being shame, guilt. Following a prolonged period of depression, anxiety, and 30 years of suffering from migraine headaches, Lois realized the detrimental impact that shame guilt was having on her life. Following this realization, she has for the past 15 plus years been working as a shame guilt educator, counselor, and filmmaker in an attempt to offer lessons on health and spiritual maturity and help us mitigate the negative energy surrounding shame guilt. So much to explore over the next hour or so. So a very warm welcome to Lois Hollis. Hello.
Hello, and thank you for exposing our only enemy, shame guilt.
No, thank you so much for agreeing to be part of this show. And I must say before we begin that I've been extremely excited about this topic because, as you know, when we connected around 4 to 6 weeks ago for the first time, and we started speaking and you're sharing the work that you're doing today surrounding shame guilt, it really made me realize some of my own demons, so to speak, that I've been experiencing over the last few years, which I'm sure we'll go into during our discussion. So, from the bottom of my heart, thank you so much. I actually want to rewind to 1990 because I know this was a year in which you had a profound spiritual experience. Could you perhaps start by shedding some light on this for us?
Well, it was very interesting that the week before that experience, I was at the Edward Casey Library in Virginia Beach. Now it's all on tape, but in those days, you could go to a bookstore and pick out your book. And one of the books I found was How to Handle Spiritual Emergencies. And I went, oh, that's an interesting book. So I just kind of looked at it because I never really read that many books. I just kind of breeze through them and find what I need to say. I have that type of intuition. So that was interesting. And then it was just very interesting because my children were off at camp, except, yeah, they were off at camp, which is summer, and they had a rest and I had a rest. I decided to take a bath and I put on the Palladian music, which I feel very close to. And immediately, I mean, not like a second later, immediately, golden light, whatever that is, golden white light poured into my head. I never meditated. I never did Kundalini. I didn't do any practices. Of course, I've always been close to God's spirit and talk to him daily because that's who I talk to. But it wasn't like I never did any practice to do anything. It just happened. And at that point, I became cosmic. I don't know what that means, but I just saw the whole universe. And ever since that day, I've been able to be here and there. Now, again, I can't explain that other than I can be talking to spirit and also talking to you, not simultaneously, but telepathically. And then the next day, I started to write. I wrote my whole childhood on the computer that I never knew about. It was like me talking to me. And from that moment, I kind of just knew things, not because I read it in the newspaper. But I was able to converse with people on current events and things of that nature. So I sort of had an in with knowledge. So when I was in horrible stress, in my, I'd say, 50s with debilitating broken bones, concussions, and broken neck, and from an experience I had in childhood, which I didn't remember it until now. So now I see my life as I had many experiences like this. This wasn't the only one, but it was the only one that I remembered. And when I remembered that one, I remembered the other ones. So all through my life, I've had connection with spirit. I guess that's the only way you could say that. So when I was like, the doctor said, you have 2 years to live because of your incredible problems, and your kidneys aren't working, and you have a leaky valve, and so forth and so on, and you can't breathe with your lungs because you're totally crippled. I talked to God because, and I eventually got information about shame and guilt. At that point, I called it shame and guilt. And so I went to the library, and one person said to me, Lois, what do you do about shame? And I went, oh, that's an odd word. Me saying that, it's an odd word. Because, like, nobody says that word, right? And not in 1990. So I went to the library because we didn't have internet, and I only could find Bradshaw's book, and said, shame is a sickness of the soul. And I went, that's interesting. Anyway, long story short, I began to learn about shame in my life. Eventually, I learned through the help of being in a circle, you know, how you do circle, there's conference, not conferences, but self-help groups, you know, how you just talk and talk and talk. And eventually I was able to understand about shame and guilt because they never talked about it either. So eventually I learned that shame and guilt was the cause of all my negative emotions. I didn't have to go to therapy for anxiety or anger or bullying or suicide and can't get out of bed in the morning. I was like tap dancing because I'm a tap dancer. That's how I got through life. I tap danced. And I think that moved the Kundalini energy all the time. So I was always moving Kundalini without knowing it. I was tap dancing, not moving Kundalini. So once I realized it, and I realized it's a thing, it's not me, I don't own it, my whole life changed. And I
Sure.
changed. And I was able to see it because of my abilities. And I just took it out and threw it away. Took it out and threw it away. Because this is very profound. Shame, guilt, energy only has one defect. It dissolves in detection.
Yeah.
Wow. So I'm like, how easy is this?
Yeah.
I can find it. But that's why it's always been secret, because if you find it, you can get rid of it.
Yeah,
I want
no, absolutely. And
That's
I,
huge.
yeah,
That's
and I,
huge.
and I really appreciate you sharing that spiritual experience, because that was certainly the catalyst for what you do today. And before I or before we discuss how your intrigue for shame guilt came about in a bit more detail, could you perhaps give us your interpretation of what shame guilt actually is? If you were to describe it in a nutshell, what would that be?
Well, I have my own shame guilt energy, but through the grace of beautiful, wonderful hosts like you, they have given it their own name. And I'll share that with you. Some people call it the shame guilt leech. Some people call it the alien invader. Some people call it the vampire. And my dearest friend says it's the evil wizard that messes with your mind. So you can pick your own title, and please let me know. But to me, it's a energy. Okay, now how can I define that? We have love energy, and everyone knows what that gives us. What gives us joy and happiness, self-confidence. We're a mighty mouse. We can do anything. We never question our abilities. I mean, we don't even question it, rather than try to defend it. So we're just like empowered people. We have compassion. We have intuition. We don't have to go to therapy to find happiness. We have it. And that's what the love energy does. And that's really who we are. However, on the other side, we have negative energy. And the negative energy comes in the form of words from your friend, your mother, your father, the government, the religion. They say, you're a stupid jerk. You can't do any better. You must kneel on your knees because you have sinned. You're bad. And those words have energy. And how do you feel when someone tells you that? You contract. So it's an energy comes from the words that people say to you negatively and what you say to yourself. Yeah, you're right. I'm stupid. I flunked that class when I was 10 years old and I'm not any good. I mean, we all do that. So shame, guilt comes to us from that energy. And what does shame, guilt do? It turns our compassion to depression. It turns our intuition to anxiety. It turns our passion to anger. So we are already passionate and loving. But shame, guilt, energy came in and twisted it. Twists our mind. Twists our health. It messes with the electrical lines, the ley lines inside of us, the meridians. And we get sick. We get illness. Okay, you have to have nutrition and other things. But this lays the groundwork for faulty absorption of minerals and vitamins. So it affects our spirituality because it's like God's talking and we have the walkie-talkie. And God's talking with his walkie-talkie and we're talking with us. Shame guilt cuts that line. So it doesn't give us access to spirit or to God.
Sure.
It damages us completely. Physically, mental, emotionally, spiritually. Now, I call it a computer virus. What happens to your computer when you get a virus? Oh, don't even talk about it, right? And what do you do about it? You get a virus removal program. And then the thing starts working again, hopefully. So yeah. I say to you, you need a shame guilt removal program. And then your computer of yourself works just fine.
Yeah. Thank you for explaining that. And as you were talking, it just made me think. I was thinking while you were speaking, and you're right. I guess different people have different things that they are holding on to in terms of shame guilt. And for me personally, it was probably linked to one of my previous relationships, in fact, from a few years ago, where I did certain things that I'm certainly not proud of even to this day. And it took me a while to get past that stage of shame, guilt for the actions that I did, which were detrimental to the relationship. And then after a few years, I realized that I now need to start transitioning from shame guilt into what I saw as self-forgiveness. And it took me a long time to actually come to that point of self-forgiveness. So I'd be interested to know from your experience, when you are sharing this message of shame guilt and the people you work with and speak to about this subject, does the topic and subject of self-forgiveness come into it? If so, what advice could you give in terms of navigating away from shame guilt towards self-forgiveness? Because I'm still in that process. I haven't managed to complete the process. I'm still very much in the middle of it.
Beautiful, brilliant question. And forgiveness is very nice, but it's not healing.
Right.
That's why you've been struggling for years and years. And guess what? You will struggle for years and years. It's nice. It's a very nice thing. I'm not saying it's bad. It's nice, but it's never going to bring you home. The only way to bring it home is in that relationship. And everyone has a relationship they either were shamed upon or they shamed them. It doesn't matter. It's the way of life. Okay? Not that it's right. It's just we're all in the same shame guilt river, okay?
Yeah.
So what you can do is do what I said. You find the shame that you said to somebody or said to yourself, see the words, and you can do this because we're all very telepathic and we're able to access other dimensions. You see it, take the words, and literally throw them out and say, shame, guilt is not for me to own. Never say my shame. Never say my guilt. Never own the monster. It's a leech. So you got to take this leech off of your body. It's sucking the blood out of you. And no matter how much you forgive yourself, how much you love yourself, how much the leech is still sucking you. So that's
right.
What you have to do. You need to actually take the leech, the vampire, whatever evil wizard, whatever you want to call it, off of you. You need to take it off of you. Like a mosquito is sucking you, you hit it.
Yeah. No, that makes complete sense, actually.
Okay,
yeah.
Because it's going to keep... Okay, a story.
Sure.
I had a client come to me recently, and he said, I like your work, but I don't think you can help me. I said, oh, why? And he was a young guy, like 30. And 30 is very young when you're 78. So he was like, I don't think you can help me because I've been in therapy for my depression for 4 years. And I still am. In fact, I'm more depressed because I've left money and I haven't gotten anywhere. So I think I'm unhelpable. I said, let me tell you, you will always be in depression, no matter what course you take, how much time you talk to somebody, how much food you eat or don't eat. You will always be in depression at some point until you get rid of the shame, guilt that's causing the depression. So he came to me and we did work like I did with you. Find it, take it away, give it away for all lifetimes, all dimensions and all parallels, because it's a dimensional leech. You got to name all the dimensions. This is dimensional healing. It isn't linear. And so I helped him with that. And guess what? A week later, he's dancing.
Right.
That's the missing key to everything. We can go to forgiveness and forgive ourselves. And I made peace. I forgave my enemies. I think that's very nice. I'm not saying it's wrong, but you're never going to dance.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, no, that makes absolute sense. And I guess I've never thought about it that way.
Because one told you.
Yeah. Yeah. I've always thought of it as being a process of one day I will let it go when it's the right time to happen. And like you said, the more you think like that, the longer it's going to stay with you. And at some point you have to let go.
Well, you have to get rid of the leech that's sucking you. I mean, like, it's a thing. That's why I became a filmmaker.
Mm.
That was not fun. But anyway, I learned how to be a filmmaker so that I can show people what shame guilt looks like and how to get rid of it. Because it's a visual. I mean, you don't understand it until you see the visuals.
Yeah, absolutely. And I did want to ask you about the filmmaking because I actually had two questions in one, which I wanted to ask a bit later on. But before I do that, I just wanted to explore something that you mentioned toward the beginning of our conversation. And I found it intriguing when I started reading upon your material, because you make a clear distinction between naming this shame guilt and not shame and guilt. What is the difference between the two? Because if I hadn't come across yourself and your work, I would have labeled it perhaps as shame and guilt. Why do you feel it's necessary to combine it as one word, shame guilt?
Because that's the road to healing. Shame potentiates guilt. Guilt potentiates shame. Guilt change shame, shame. It's a vicious cycle. Now, if you see a coin, you have heads and you have tails. but it's a coin. That's what I'm saying. It's shame, guilt. Now you have shame on one side and guilt on the other, but it's still a coin. Okay, now, the reason that culture, psychology does it in that way, because it confuses you. Oh, I have to work on the shame. Shame's really bad. Guilt, not too bad, because, you know, we got to be moral. Hey, give me a break. We're moral. God made us that way. We're happy. We're loving. We're joyful. We're compassionate. And shame comes in like a tornado and messes everything up. So it's not that I have to take happiness classes or learn how to be happy. I am happy. I just have a black blanket over me that I can't see my happiness. Okay? That's all there is. There ain't no more. It's not complicated. Now, so your mind's going, but I heard them say guilt is good, but I know shame is bad. How? So your brain is, instead of get rid of the shame guilt leech, your brain's going, I don't know. We have to get rid of shame. No, we got to keep guilt. No, we got to keep guilt. No shame. That's what your mind's doing and stopping you from healing. Okay. We have two nervous systems. One is unconscious and one's conscious. And that's it. Shame rides on the unconscious mind. And guilt rides on the conscious mind. But it's another heads and tails. It's the same thing. Now, why do we get so mixed up? Because this is how, I'm a nurse, this is how medicine works. If you have a virus in your brain, they call it meningitis. If you have the same exact virus in your lungs, they call it pneumonia. If you have the same virus in your kidneys, they call it nephritis. In your liver, they call it hepatitis. Do you see where I'm going with this? But what is it? It's the same virus, but it's at a different location so they can make billing and diagnoses for that. And I guess it has some help, but it confuses you because with shame, guilt, you're like, it confuses your mind. But it's the same problem. So you get the same antibiotic for meningitis, nephritis, pneumonia, hepatitis. You get the same medicine. So that's what I'm saying. I'm giving you the same medicine for all these things. You know, truth is simple. Truth is simple. And that's what we have been deluged with, all this rhetoric, when it's just a thing. Now, people say, I call it shame guilt because I don't know what else to call it. Maybe someday they'll come up with something, but I can't separate the two because I separate your mind. And your mind isn't focused on getting rid of the shame guilt that you said or someone said to you. Is it shame or is it guilt? I don't know. So you're in a quandary of what to call it instead of getting rid of the dumb thing.
Yeah, no, again, that makes complete sense. And you're absolutely right. When one feels shame, certainly from my experience, guilt is automatically within that emotion as well. So it does make sense, I guess, to call it one, because guilt is often attached to shame. But thank
it's
you for...
It's the same thing. It's either heads or tails. Throw the coin. Yeah. What am I going to feel today, shame or guilt? Yeah. And psychology and the people like Brene Brown, I'm so glad she brought shame into the public. But, you know, they're right in defining it. Shame makes you feel, you know, lesser than, and guilt is you're a bad person. So the definitions are true. But that doesn't help me to heal. It slips my brain. They both make me feel bad.
Yeah.
They both make me feel like I did something good, because shame says you should hide. Because you're so bad. Guilt says, yeah, you're right. You should hide. You're bad. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
It's It's this, I can only think of it as a coin, a nickel, heads or tails, but it's still a nickel. I mean, give me a break. It's still a nickel.
Yeah, no, that's a great metaphor, and no, thank you again for clarifying that for us.
And
Now I
go
want,
ahead.
yeah, sorry, go ahead. Sorry to cut you off.
So when you say shame, guilt, your mind comes together. We can't split our mind. We lose focus. And then that's a great way of making people stay in shame, guilt, because they can't find a way out. And the truth is, our government, our religion, people in authority use shame, guilt to make us buy the right products, do what they want us to do, and so forth and so on. So you can see the work of shame, guilt is very, very effective. In fact, I found this book a couple months ago, How to Be a Jewish Mother. And it's written in 1908. And it's how to shame them into obedience.
Is this a book that you've purchased fairly recently, or have you had it for a while?
I had it for like a couple months. I paid 10 cents at the thrift store, you know.
Okay,
And
so
it's all about, yeah.
that's a book you recommend.
I don't recommend it. I just think it's
Okay.
interesting that it's
Right, okay.
that it they make a book about how to shame your kid into obedience. At least they're honest. But
Yeah.
you know, when you look at this now in a different light, you say, "Oh my God, it's true. They shamed me. They jilted me, and I don't want it. I don't want it." So when people talk to me in those words, I go, "Ch-ch-ch-ch-ch. I don't take it." Now, did I do this immediately? No, it took me a while to understand the whole thing. So I
Sure.
just shove it off. And you're smart. We're smart. But shame makes us stupid. Can I tell you why?
Of course.
Okay. Have you ever heard of David Hawkins?
I haven't, no.
Yeah, well, he's a brilliant man. He lives in heaven now. And what he did many wonderful things, and you can look him up because he's an extremely good resource. Anyway, one of the things he did was he gave a number, a mathematical number to each emotion. That's pretty impressive. And I don't know if he knew how great it was, but I think it's magnificent because it's mathematic, it's math, it's numbers. You can't fudge numbers. It isn't my opinion. Okay. I have an opinion, but this is math. Okay. He goes from high to low. And his highest number is 700,000 to the 30th power. 30 zeros after 700, comma zero. 700,000 is enlightenment. Okay. That's pretty high. And that's when you're glowing in light, like the masters and Jesus and everything. So then it goes down. We have love and joy and compassion and self-esteem. I'm not saying them all correctly, but you can look at them, the numbers in the different emotions he tested. But essentially, it's all the good, loving emotions that we talked about that love gives us. At 200, 200, no more. It begins to be negative. It goes anger, depression, hatred, not good enough, so forth and so on. Do you know what the last one is?
Please tell
Shame,
us.
guilt. Shame is
Right.
above it, and guilt is above it, but it's the
Right.
same, you know.
Yeah.
His models have guilt first and then shame or shame, but it comes in at 10. And some models show 20.
Right.
Okay, 20 from 700,000 to the 30th power. That's how low your vibration is, your energy is, your thought to them. And do you know what's after that? Nothing. Death. Your body can't vibrate any lower than
Interesting.
guilt. Okay, so when you're in guilt, I say, get out. Okay, you've got to get out. Now, how can you get out? You can feel regret. Regret's okay. Anger is good. They all have shame attached to them, but you have a way of getting out. So if you're in guilt and you can't get out, you got to get out. You either call a friend, and if you don't have, people say, I don't have any friends. Well, call the local Walmart and talk to a person. I mean, talking to another person will get you out of it. It's not going to heal you, but you can't stay in guilt. You can't. You can't stay in guilt. If I have anything message today, you can't stay in guilt. Go shopping, go eating, do something, go be angry. You just got to get out of guilt because guilt has no solution because you're not good enough to have a solution.
And I
And
guess it's very difficult to move forward.
that causes the drug problem. I can't live here because I'm not good enough to live here. I mean, it's all guilt, but we got to get out. I'm so passionate about that because people are dying and it's not necessary because they're in guilt. Guilt is, that is the horror of this life, guilt. And then people say you have to feel guilty, become moral. Man, I got to talk to those people. So that's why I'm so passionate about this. Now, I have, ever since that experience I had, I start writing from spirit and God talks and I write, and that's just, I'm just the secretary because I couldn't think of this stuff. Anyway, so I have those pages on my website. Now is the time, and you can download the book. It's about 20 pages. And if you read these words in a different format, your energy rises. So you can get out of guilt without trying to get out of guilt. Okay? And that's very important. People can use that, and it's free. You just press the button if you don't have any friends to talk to, or you don't want to talk to anybody. And people say, I said, oh, there's a suicide hotline. Do you know people are too shameful to call the suicide hotline to admit that they're suicidal? That's so sad. So that's why I said call Walmart or somebody or Home Depot. Or they always have an answering machine that you knew the hours and stuff. I mean, they're not going to help you. I'm just saying you have to hear a human voice.
No, you're right. It's always far better to talk to someone than keep those thoughts of shame, guilt, to yourself and
No, get rid of them.
get rid of them. So before you get rid of them, is it okay to talk about them with someone
Oh,
close
yeah,
to
you
you?
have to. Yeah. But watch your language. Oh, it's such a shame. It's raining today. I can't have my barbecue. No, it's not a shame. It's unfortunate. We have to move our equipment, but it's okay. It's not a shame. It's not shame. Oh, it's such a shame that people don't understand this. No, it's not a. You can't use the word shame because shame calls, when you say shame, it calls it to you. You don't want it. You got to kick it out. But when we're talking about it, we have to talk about it. But we also tell it to get the heck out.
No, that just
Kick
made
it out.
again complete sense what you just said there about us using shame in everyday language, and it's true. I mean, I use it so flippantly sometimes, even with friends or family, like you said, oh,
Everybody does.
it's a shame it's raining, or a shame I couldn't do that, it's a shame we couldn't travel there today. It's everyday language, you're right. But we often, I guess, as you were saying, we don't realize the energy that's attached to such words. That's a real eye opener, a
You
real
can
eye
even,
opener.
I give permission to cuss. You know, it's okay. It's better to cuss than use the word shame, okay?
No, certainly food for thought. I want to switch gears slightly because throughout your life you've been exposed to certain life experiences at somewhat unconventional ages. For example, at the age of 12, you found yourself working as a nurse's aide. Do you remember that time when you were 12 working in this field? If so, could you perhaps Just shed some light on this experience for you. What was it like at the age of 12 working as a nurse's aide?
Well, most of my childhood, I have not been able to uncover, except talking to God mainly. That's about the biggest thing. And I didn't know everybody didn't do that. I really didn't. They said, "Who's your best friend?" I said, "God, talk to him all the time." They went, "What? You're weird." I go, "Okay." But I always was concerned about health. Oh, I don't want to do that because it'll hurt me, or I don't want to take that. It's not good. It doesn't taste. If something didn't taste good, I spit it out. I just was always concerned about health, and I wanted to help. I always wanted to help. Now that can be a detriment because you're giving yourself up instead of taking care of yourself. But I always wanted to help people. It was just, some people like to do woodwork, some people like to paint. All I wanted to do was tap dance and help others. That's all I wanted to do. And I think that my desire to tap dance was because of my brain injuries. I had severe dyslexia. I had Ehlers syndrome. That's something I had to look up, Irlen. That's when you look at words and they keep moving. So I was labeled stupid. I remember my parents called to school and they said, "Your ch this is a Catholic school in the 50s." And they said, "We want to tell you that we will keep your child in school because we are a Catholic school. But we put her in the back of the class because she is called a stupid child. She cannot read and she talks with a slur and stutters. So she has many deficiencies. And I just want to tell you that she will never learn." And that's because of all the brain traumas I had. My neck was broken. C1, 2, and 3 were broken. Severe blows to the head, thrown down steps, and so forth. So there was massive trauma. And of course, with massive trauma, you have brain injuries. And you, so God talked to me, and I learned a lot of things. And the more I danced, the more I could read. It was very interesting. And now that I understand the physiology, that I'm bringing the right and left hemispheres together. And over the course of years, I learned how to read. And the most incredible time was when I got a letter from the University of Pennsylvania, an Ivy League school in Philadelphia, that I was admitted to college. I went, "Oh my God, I'm smart." So I just, like, you want to talk, you want to do your podcast. I always wanted to help people heal. So it was obviously to go into nursing. And then I helped with the creation of the first kidney hemodialysis unit. And I always saw things that weren't done. So I said, "I have to do it because nobody's doing it." And that's how I felt about the shame guilt work. It's like, well, nobody's doing anything about this, and I am, so I'll do it. It just was natural.
And you also mentioned a few minutes ago the fabulous work that you're doing with filmmaking. And that's another question I wanted to delve into with you, because later in your life, at the age of 64, I believe, or thereabouts, you enrolled yourself into a film school. I'm intrigued about this because it's not often you hear about someone enrolling in a film school
At
in their
64.
60s. Exactly, at your age. So that was really fascinating to hear. Could you walk us through what this experience was like for you, and how did you navigate your way through this new experience?
I was giving a lecture in Sedona when I found out about all these emotions and how we could talk to them. And I was so excited, and I'm talking to people, and I'm like having so much fun. And somebody raises their hand. They said, Lois, what are you talking about? I said, well, talk to your depression. They're there and you can talk to them and they can make friends with them. You get rid of the shame guilt and, you know, it's just a thing. And they go, Lois, I love you dearly, but I don't see what you see. I said, you don't see that? I couldn't believe it. So I said, oh, I'll just go to film school and make a film. What do I see? Oh my God. It wasn't as easy as I thought. However, I lived in Sedona, and Sedona had its own film school, which was awesome. And then the interesting thing, and I'm glad you mentioned this to me, is because it was like several thousands of dollars. And I was like, oh my goodness, I can't afford that because, you know, I live on a restricted income and how, you know, and that's kind of nutty anyway. So I came home from my interview with film school. On the way home, I stopped at my mailbox to pick up my mail. And there was a envelope from a corporation. And I said, I think they got the wrong person, but they got the right name. So I opened it up and there was a check for almost the same amount of money of film school tuition. It was thousands of dollars. And it's
Wow.
because my ex-husband and I, who were divorced, we had many stocks together. And one of the stocks companies was sold, and they had to give out the shares to the people, you know, because it was no longer a viable company, but I still, by law, they had to give me my money for the shares. And
Yeah.
that's how I went to film school.
Right.
I put the check in the mail and wrote them a check, and I went to film school. So I said, okay, I guess I'm supposed to go. That's a true story. So when I went to film school, obviously I was the oldest one there. They're all teenagers, you know, mainly guys with cameras and all that. And I can't do cameras. I really can't. I just, my brain don't work that way, but I try. Anyway, so it was very shameful because I couldn't do what they did, but I had the idea. So about 6 months into the whole situation where I didn't understand about lenses and cameras angles and so forth, I thought it was neat, but I could, I didn't see myself doing it, but I'm still got to do it. You know, it's that I got to do it. So we all had lunch and things together, and we were always talking about they're mainly talking about their ideas. And I said, can I give you my opinion? I said, oh, sure. So I gave them an opinion. So I became the person that gave them the way to do their film, the concepts of doing their film, and how it can relate to people. So I was that part of the film for them, and they didn't care because they had all the tech. So we made a deal. They did the tech, and I did the concept. And everybody was happy. That's how I got through film school. I made a deal with my fellow people, you know. I made a deal. And it turned, and it wasn't the best when it first came out. And someone who wasn't a consultant to the school said, I love your concept, but it needs a little work. I said, duh, you think so? And he was an Academy Award winner. So he took it upon himself to help me to formulate out of discord into harmony better. And it's still out there and it's changing people and people because it shows you how to talk to your emotions. And a lot of therapists are using it too, which it makes me very happy. But anyway, and he said, why did you use child actors? I said, because they have to be child actors for emotions. He said, well, you do know that's the hardest thing to do in filmmaking. I said, well, I'm glad I didn't know that because I did that. So that
Yeah.
was totally on fate, but I'm so glad I did it. And I'm working with someone else now to do another film.
Oh, great. And for everyone who's watching and listening, the film that Lois is referring to, you can find out more information about that on Lois's website, which is loishollis.com, LOISHOLLIS.com. And if I'm not mistaken, Lois, the film you're referring to is called I'm Good Film. Is that right?
Yes, I'm good film, and it's on 3 episodes because I wanted to make it to 15 minutes. And as you know, shame guilt is so big, and you know, we have a talk, but you know, we could talk, you know, next week, and you know, there's still
Yeah.
more and more. So I didn't want to overload people because when you overload them, they throw it all away. So
Sure.
if they really want to see the films, go to imgoodfilm.com. All the films are there. All the websites are interlinked. I'm
Yeah.
very blessed to have a very beautiful, wonderful, smart tech person. And he does all the tech for me. We made a deal.
That's good. So yeah,
And this.
just a quick correction there then. So while you do have information on your personal website about the film, you feel it's better that people go to imgoodfilm.com. Yes?
That would be the best way because
That
I
would be
have
the
a
best
very
one.
good interviews there. And if you want to listen to podcasts, because each person, I have over 100 something people now. Each
Yeah.
person has a different take on shame guilt, but it all comes down to the same truth. Shame guilt is not ours to own or to give. And you
Yeah.
can come to whatever. And the main important thing I'd like to leave people with is that we can make friends with our inner critic. We don't kick him out. We don't cut him up. We don't chop his head off. He's part
Yeah.
of us. You can't cut your arm off. The problem is he lives in night. My inner critic calls himself King. Da, I wonder. So he, King, is living in 1950 when I'm a young kid and don't want to get fallen off a rock or a cliff or something like that. I'm living in 2022. I'm an adult now. So we have to help persuade our inner critic to come from that timeline into our present timeline. That's all there is.
Yeah.
He's living in the long, he or she, your inner critic, is living in the wrong timeline. He still thinks you're 2 years old and no one told you you're an adult. So you have to say, hi, how are you? How can we become friends? And they'll probably shush you away because that's what they do, because you're stupid, because that's what you say you are, because that's what your society tells you, because shame guilt told you, right? And he's your shame guilt producer. So you have to make friends with him. And you
Yeah.
can. It doesn't take that long. It's kind of fun. Now, King goes around the world trying to find me wonderful podcasts like you instead of shaming me all the time. He's got another job.
Right. Yeah. No, really interesting insights there. And just a quick reminder again, in case anyone missed it. So whether you're watching this or listening, the website to find out more about Lois's film is imgoodfilm.com, and you can find out all the information about the film through that website, and I will include that website on the YouTube and podcast description as well. Lois, I know you are leading a busy life, and you have lots of things going on, so we'll be wrapping up very shortly, but before we do, I just wanted to ask you one final question, and this is a question that I was actually looking forward to asking you because, as you know, we were speaking on email over the last few weeks. And within our conversation, you mentioned that you are someone who is very open to feedback and suggestion from other people. And you allow yourself to ponder over feedback and suggestions before deciding whether or not to take it on board or not. Now, the reason why I wanted to ask you this question is because, and this is a somewhat selfish question for me, so excuse me in advance. I've always found it very difficult for the majority of my life to take on feedback and suggestions from people with regards to what I should be doing or if I should be doing something in another way to what I'm doing. And I think I do that because I'm very self-reliant, and I have been self-reliant for many, many years, especially in my professional life, because I've always found that to deliver me the best results. And then more recently, over the last few months, I started pondering on this and realized that actually I've been doing a lot of this in my personal life as well, where I don't like being told what to do or how to do something. And I've been asking myself the question, Can this be detrimental in the long run? Now, from someone who has significantly more life experience than me, what's been your experience of this? How do you manage to sift through what can be good advice and what can be negative advice? Because I feel I'm at the point in my life where perhaps I should be a bit more softer with my approach. I'd love to get your insights into this.
But that's a very good question because I'm looking at my own life as well. You're very, very good at this stuff. I would say that before and while I was doing the shame guilt thing, it took a couple of years. But you get better and better. It's amazing. You get smarter and smarter and younger, the more shame you get rid of. It's amazing. Anyway, so I totally did not want people's advice. I felt it an insult because I was so shame guilt ridden. But then I came to a point that I was, higher in my vibration, like David Hawkins says, you're moving up because you're not doing the shame guilt thing and you're getting more and more smarter, you're getting enlightened. And that stopped me from finding out how to be with everybody. I didn't want to isolate myself. So that's where I came to. And now I feel like I want your suggestion. I'll never forget my youngest daughter is incredible author, reader. She's just incredible. She knows what to say, when to say it, and how to say it. Anyway, when I first wrote my intro to my book many, many years ago, I was so excited. I mean, I said, look, here it is. And she says, Mom, I don't know what a darn thing you're talking about. She said, you have to reach people. I said, what do you mean, reach people? That what I had to learn. What is your problem? I want to know your problem so I can tell you the solution. And people see it that way. So if for teaching, for understanding and being compassionate, you have to know how people think. I don't know how people think until they tell me. Now, if someone, like I'm doing dishes or something, and someone tells me use more soap or less soap, I go, that's micromanaging. I don't like that. I hate that. And it's very detrimental. So I think you have to decide what is micromanaging and what is important. I can't stand micromanaging.
Yeah.
I'll tell you off.
Yeah.
Unless I can see a truth in it.
Yeah.
Because we can, I can do something two ways. It doesn't matter. So don't tell me I can't do it that way because I can. I decide which way I want to do it. Now, if it's more beneficial to do it your way, okay, that's smart. But if it's stupid, I don't like stupid comments.
Yeah.
That
Yeah, no,
help?
yeah. Yeah. I think because and I never realized it until recently actually I work this way in my personal life. I always thought it was just associated with my professional life. But yeah, over the years I've just found it to deliver me the best results, and I'm always more content when I'm making decisions by myself.
And you
And
should
that
be. That's very
yeah.
empowering.
And that could be for
And
anything. Yeah.
so when people say, I go, oh, that's interesting. And then I decide either I take it or I don't.
Yeah.
So I don't get insulted like I used to because the shame guilt is less. You're
Right,
getting
right.
insulted because the level of shame guilt is high.
I
The less
see.
shame
Yeah.
you have, the less
Interesting.
insults you're going to feel. So it has not. What I'm trying to say is everything is related to the amount of shame, guilt, energy you're carrying. If you're happy, you're sad, you're insulted, you don't know what to do, confusion is shame, guilt. When you can't make a decision, you're in shame, guilt.
Yeah.
Whenever you got a problem, think shame, guilt first.
Interesting.
Isn't that
Wow.
interesting?
No, it is. And
How huge is that?
it is.
How
It's
huge is that?
yeah. You're right. It's even linked to when someone gives you advice. The way you take it is based upon, like you
How
said.
much shame guilt you have.
Yeah, and I never thought about it that way. That's really interesting. It's a
And that's why I
foundation.
said the more shame guilt I got rid of, I wasn't insulted anymore.
Very interesting. This is something that I'm definitely going to start looking into
You
more
just
and working on.
have to take shame guilt out and throw it away. And it's I
Absolutely.
am. It's not I am. It's just I am. So I just want to make that clarification. But that teaches you how to just take it away. Or I do sessions with people, and you literally can take it away, and you have to. It's a physicality. It's a leech on you. I mean, you got it, which is a whole different way of looking at, because emotions are depression. It's different, but shame guilt's different. It's an energy put upon humanity deliberately to make us stupid.
You know, definitely food for thought. And thank you for sharing so much over the last hour. It's been really insightful. Lois, before we wrap up and before I remind everybody of how they can follow your work, is there anything else that you wanted to mention? Something perhaps that I haven't mentioned through my questions? If so, please feel free to do so.
I think you covered it all. My message is don't stay in guilt or shame. Kick it out. Call a friend. Read my writings. I don't know. You're very smart and see it. I'll leave you a vision if I have a minute.
Yeah,
The
sure.
Wizard of Oz. Dorothy goes up to see the wizard. Oh, a powerful wizard. And she shows. Scared and trembles in fear. So she finally gets there, and Toto pulls the curtain back. And what does she see? A little old man, bald and gray, with a big machine puffing green smoke. That's shame guilt. It's a puff of green smoke. That's all there is. There ain't no more. So you be a Toto. That's my message. Be a Toto and pull the curtain back.
Be a Toto and pull the curtain back. What a fabulous way to end this episode. Lois Hollis, thank you so much. It's been an absolute honor and privilege connecting with you and having this wonderful conversation. You've certainly lit up some light bulbs in my own mind as to the subject of shame guilt. And as I said at the beginning of the conversation, it's something that I've been dealing with and struggling with over the last few years. And certainly this conversation has gone a long way in helping me. So from the bottom of my heart, thank you so much. I
Thank
really
you for
appreciate it.
exposing the evil wizard.
Thank
Da-da.
you once again. And for everybody who's watching and listening, just a quick reminder. Lois Hollis's website, which is loishollis.com, that's spelled LOISHOLLIS.com. And the other website, which we mentioned in conversation a few minutes ago, which is the website for Lois Hollis's film, which is imgoodfilm.com. Please do go check out that as well for more insights into Lois's film that she made, all to do with shame guilt and how to deal with it. And you can also catch Louise on Twitter at LouiseHollis3. Thank you so much for watching and listening to this episode. I hope you've enjoyed it as much as I have. Until next time, do take care of yourself. Have a blessed day.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.